Bobbish.
Yes, thanks for having me. Today I'm going to talk a bit about state management, especially how it relates to a system that is very extensible, that is for the most part consisting of stuff that is not part of the core and does not know about each other and still has to work without interfering with each other. Yeah, my name is Marijn Havenbeek. If you move in the JavaScript world, you may know me from one of these projects. The thing I'm going to be talking about now mostly is CodeMirror, a code editor written in JavaScript, open source, that you can insert in a web page to have an editor component with a lot of the features that people expect from a code editor nowadays. So one thing about code editors, this is very important, is that they need to be extendable. It depends on the context, of course, but even in something like a standalone code editor like VS Code, a lot of value people get from it is custom extensions that they add to fit whatever they're doing. And if you are writing a component, a library that people are going to embed in who knows what kind of systems, it's even more important that it can do new things that were not anticipated in the core. So it's using, CodeMirror is using a setup where very little is part of the actual required core of the library. And even stuff like the undo history or syntax highlighting are extensions working on the same API that third-party code can work on, so that you can replace basically everything and do everything that the core does in your third-party code. That, of course, comes with its own kind of challenges. Another thing that is typical for code editors is that there's lots of interdependent states. Like, all these extensions are going to have some state, application state, that they track, which is usually at least dependent on what the document currently is. Every time the document changes, they all have to update something, so that whatever they're tracking still matches the current document, as well as other parts of the state, like the selection. And state transitions come in a lot of different flavors. Like, there's no fixed small set of things that can happen to update the editor state. Even just the basic stuff that the user can do comes in a lot of flavors. They can type something, they can move the selection, they can undo, redo, pick a completion, whatever. And extensions are going to add even more state transition flavors to this. That poses some new challenges. If you go for the naive, classical, at least in the JavaScript world, model of tracking interdependent states, you have the different subprograms track their own state, and you somehow wire them together so that when one thing changes, the others kind of follow after that. Usually with something like event handlers, like the browser interface, for example, even the Node.js interface, these are all very heavy on the event handlers, which are imperative things that something happens, you can register that you want to know if it happens, and then you're told and you react to that at some more or less specified point in time after the thing happened. But of course, once you have a bunch of interdependent pieces of state, which may have more dependencies between them in a kind of direct acyclic graph structure, doing this like step by step in an imperative way, even if you rigorously register your event handlers between them, means that you have observable inconsistent state because stuff updates in an order and at the point where not everything has updated yet, some of these pieces of state in the different subprograms will be out of sync. And if you access them in the meantime, you'll get problems. So for example, you have here the core library, which maintains a document and a selection. You have the parser, which maintains a parse tree, and you have the highlighter, which uses the tree and the document to assign colors to different pieces of the document. Now, the document updates and the event handler for the highlighter fires, and it's reached from the parse tree, but for some reason, those were registered in an order where the parse tree hasn't updated yet. And this becomes really awkward to reason about. Conceptually, you can kind of see it as you have your state on a piece of paper, and when something happens, you just scratch something out and write over it what the new state is. And at any point, the old piece of paper is still there and in the process of being updated. But of course, coming from a functional perspective, what you want is you start a new piece of paper and you write your whole new state in a rigorous, disciplined way where you know that everything in the new state is updated and coherent with the rest of what happened. So what we arrived at there as a similar thing that a lot of functional UI systems arrive at is the state is a single persistent immutable value, and changing the application state involves computing a new value and swapping it in atomically. So you update one pointer somewhere that says this is the current application state. Before that happens, the old state is there, and when it happens, the whole new state is there in one point. It's not an observable process that leaves an inconsistent state in between. But as I said, this is an extensible system, so we don't just have a static data type for this state which has some fixed fields. We need extensions to be able to define our own fields which are added to each instance of the state. And these then, of course, have to come with their own logic for computing this new value of that state field from the update. That means you want the update to also be represented somewhere. It's not just something that happens, some function that gets called. You need a first class value that describes an update to the application state. This is a long history in systems like Elm or Redux, where they usually go with something they call actions, which tend to be sometimes like unions of the various things that can happen in the system, possibly with some extra data that describes it. We find that this works really poorly in an extendable system because you do not have a fixed set of types of updates. Different extensions can define new things that can happen to the system, and everyone needs to be able to react to all the kinds of updates that are relevant to them, which is difficult if they are come from like different pieces of the system that don't know about each other. So what we do is a thing that's called a transaction, which is a single data type holding a set of effects, which are things that change the state. So each time something happens, you create a transaction and add, this is open-ended, third-party software can define their own effects, export them so that other modules can import them and then look at them. I'm not sure why it just jumped, I didn't even touch my computer. So a transaction is a set of these effects, and the update logic for each piece of the state can observe the effects that it's interested in and ignore all the other effects, so they can handle all kinds of transactions that may be generated by who knows what software, and pick out the parts that are relevant to them and respond to them appropriately. The fact that the new state is a pure function of the old state and the transaction is really, really useful. It allows a kind of reasoning about what's going to happen with your state. A system where things move through an opaque web of events really do not provide. It allows you to take a snapshot of your state by just storing an old state object. It allows you to compare two states by you have both of those objects and you look, is this field different or what else changed? Of course, it also has a cost, especially in JavaScript land, which is not a language that is known for its super robust support for pure functions and immutable data structures. It's also culturally, it is rather quite a step for many people programming against this system to actually formulate their stuff in a way where they don't mutate their old state. But often, these kind of things, like for example, the document structure in this editor. Okay, this is really strange. I don't know what could be touching my computer to do things, but we'll see. Right, the document structure is a tree which reuses most of its structure when you update a small part of the document. And often these kind of things have other advantages as well. Like you need some kind of advanced data structure for your document as well if you want to support multiple megabyte size content efficiently. And though it is an investment, it pays off in most of the corners where we did it because it just makes other things easier. So now each field, like these little things that can be extended that are added to the state, provides a similar thing where the field is updated by a function from its old value and the transaction. Simply speaking, in fact, often these fields also need, as we saw or also in the diagram for the event-based system at the start, often these need to access the value of other fields, which these inputs don't provide them. Now, one way to do that would be to actually have them explicitly declare the dependencies and then topologically sort them in the ideal order to compute them so that the ones with no dependencies go first and so on, and then you feed them the value of the dependencies, but that's kind of awkward to program against. So what we're doing is a kind of sleight of hand where the value of a field in a new state takes the new state as an argument. So that's kind of circular, but it can be made to work pretty easily by just allocating the state first with its fields initialized, uninitialized, and then just start initializing them one by one. And as the logic for initializing a field accesses another field, you eagerly compute that so that they just naturally get computed in the order in which they are required. And by the time the state is initialized, you've computed all those fields. So we track for each field states initialized, uninitialized, or initializing, so that if you somehow end up in a state where there's a cyclic dependency, someone is going to access a field that's initializing and you can raise an error because we do not support cyclic data flow within the fields. It doesn't actually come up, but it's nice to be secure against it. The fact that states are static, predictable things mean that they also carry with them a configuration, which describes the set of fields that they must carry. So when you initialize your initial editor state, you provide a bunch of extensions to it, which are distilled into just the configuration of the state shape. And then on every update, it carries this state, this shape along to the next state. And one thing we found that we needed to support is dynamic reconfiguration, where during the lifetime of an editor state, you change the set of, you want, like the user picks a new extension that they want to enable. You don't want to throw everything away that you already have, say your undo history or whatever. So, there we go again. In that case, if you reconfigure the state, which is also done through a transaction, computes a new set of fields and just preserves the value of the field that is still in the new configuration, throws away the ones that are deleted, and initializes from this new state the fields that are added to the new state. So each field also comes with an initializer, which takes a current state and determines the value of that field in this initial state. this is again using this lazy initialization logic, which allows us to provide a state object even though the fields inside of it haven't all finished initializing. Of course, living in the browser with its very event and imperative mutation-driven API means that a lot of the system is imperative. So the question is it actually worth to try and impose this kind of functional structure on a system like this? Our experience is that it really is. There's ghosts here, I'm sorry about that. What's it listening to?
It's actually the clicker, so maybe the clicker.
Okay. All right. That despite part of the system being very imperative, it still provides a lot of really useful structure to have at least this part of your program, the state management, which is often where things go wrong and which definitely helps when things go wrong to figure out what is going wrong, to have that all be purely functional. So the way it works in practice is you have the editor view, which is a user interface component which has a given editor state and renders the code in the editor to the screen, manages the selection. When the user does something to this interface, it converts that into a transaction. It's called dispatching in the system. You dispatch a transaction, it means compute a new state from this transaction and the current state, swap that state into the view component, and then have that synchronize itself to this new state. It also has access to the transaction so that it's easy at that point to see exactly what has happened, and it can do things like it only needs to redraw the codes that actually changed, and basically minimize the amount of work it's doing because it knows exactly what happened. Incremental updating is a big thing in these kind of systems because you do not want, there's lots of derived data, like say the syntax tree or the location of lint warnings and stuff like that. You do not want to compute that from scratch on every keystroke because an editor has to be relatively quick to respond, and it's really annoying if your key press is like 150 milliseconds or something. So what we do is, for example, the parse tree, there's a whole incremental parser system which looks at the transaction, exactly knows exactly what changed, usually changes are tiny, and then sets up a new parse of the document using as much of the old structure as possible. It's a whole subfield as well. It's possible to do robust incremental parsing where you actually still have the correct tree that you would have gotten if you parsed from scratch by reusing a lot of work that was already done in a parse for a very similar document. UI updates, both in the core editor view and in a lot of the extensions also, make sure to only do the minimal work needed to get things synchronized to the new state. So the principles as far as state management that we ended up with is that it's really, really useful to have a single immutable value represent your entire application state. I'm not sure if that always generalizes to bigger applications, but for at least a component like this, it's there's no doubt that this works really well. The state holds a set of fields which is extendable. This is going to be very different in different setups, and that's okay, and the system handles it. It's updated atomically, so you never see inconsistent state. Changes in the state are described by a thing called a transaction, which is a set of effects. Again, a set, having sets of things is really great for open-ended extendable systems where you don't know in advance what exactly is going to flow through a part of the program. And it's really important that the transaction describes the entire change, like nothing else changes except what is described as being changing in the transaction. And that is the only way to update the application state. So now you know there's a single code path that's going to be handling all the state updates, and there's no other side channels where weird things might be happening. So if during debugging, it's very, very helpful to be able to tap into that and see exactly why the state is changing. And this kind of thing is composable in that the different plugins or extensions don't really step on each other's toes. They can work with changes generated by other third-party extensions that they never heard of reliably, even though they aren't aware of their existence. And these update functions, like reducers, they're often called in Redux or other systems, they tend to be relatively simple and describe the entire logic that is needed to update some piece of state. So that, it's easy to construct things that keep the whole application state between the different submodules consistent by construction. It's not, you don't have to do a lot of complicated work. It's just, if you follow the recipe here, it is likely to be correct. Some examples of how this is actually used in the code editor are, for example, the undo history. As I said, it's not in core, it's an extension which observes transactions that modify the document and stores the inverse of the change they made. There's also a kind of operational transform and algebra of changes in the system which allows you to invert changes and compose them, stuff like that. So it stores the inverted changes, groups them together by some logic, which again it can observe from the transactions of how close in time together and in space together these changes are, whether to treat them as a single undo event or not. And then when the, so this is a state field holding these, kind of stack of events, each of them telling you what to do to invert the event. When the user undoes, you take the top event, apply those changes in your transaction, as well as add another effect in the transaction which says pop off the top event from the undo history, so that it doesn't treat it like a normal change and like duplicates it onto its own history. There's a bit more to it because we also support changes that aren't added to the history, so then you have to, like, you're not just rolling back to a previous document shape, you have to maybe move these old changes over some changes that didn't get undone, which is a different topic. We're using a form of operational transformation where you basically take two changes that happened in this order and then define how they would look if they were happen in the other order. It's also used for collaborative editing, which I'll get back to in a second. It's again also something that's supported by the undo history, where you, for example, make some change that you don't want the user to be able to undo. You can set a flag and say this is not undoable, don't store it as normal. Another feature would be like a linter, where linting is usually done by external tools, where you have your code editor on the one side and a library that takes a piece of text in a given language and then spits out a sequence of warnings or errors about that code. So that's kind of in this system disconnected from the editor, where if you're idle for a second or like a given amount of time, it takes the current document, feeds it to the lint logic, gets back synchronously or asynchronously a set of warnings or errors. And then at this point, I forgot to mention before, in this extensions can also define a imperative part which lives in this kind of view component, which is used for things like asynchronous actions, drawing user interfaces, reacting to button presses and stuff like that. So for example, the linter, if it has its own imperatively running piece which observes editor update, and if it knows that it needs to relint and nothing has happened for a while, it asynchronously starts a lint process. When it finishes, it dispatches a transaction saying, okay, we add a bunch of lint errors to the editor state, and draw these as like little squiggly underlines or something in the document, maybe also add a gutter showing them. But then, because these are not kept in sync with the document changes, when the document continues to change, these lint errors have to kind of be mapped to their new position in the document, because like the user might be typing inside of them, deleting them entirely, stuff like that. And until a next lint pass happens, they have to be consistent with where the where they currently are in the document. That's a concept that happens a lot in editors, is mapping positions from where they were before a change to where they were after a change, so that you can continue to track your data structures in relation to the current document. Collaborative editing is another thing that's an extension. So basically, what you want to do is continuously synchronize the content of your editor with the content of some other editor, possibly running on a different machine over the network. How that works is the editor, the extension adds a state field that tracks changes that have happened locally but have not been synced yet. So there's a server that you can push changes to, and if your version of the document corresponds to the version of the server, it accepts them and says, okay, yeah, those are now part of the canonical document that other people can see. If you're behind when you try to push changes, it says, no, you're out of sync, try again later. And you're also continuously fetching changes that other people might be making from that server. So what the extension on the client does, it's tracking changes that haven't been synchronized yet, and it's constantly polling the server for new changes. And when changes from other peers come in, it moves those locally made changes that have been made from document version A, which is also the, like, it's the version that you know the server has. So when new changes come in from the server, those also start at document version A. When you have those concurrent sets of changes, you move your own changes forward over the remote changes so that they apply to document version B, which is the one that is current after the remote changes. And then you continue trying to submit your changes to the server, which will eventually accept them, causing the whole system to eventually reach a consistent document across the client. It's really fun to be able to do all this kind of stuff in third-party code. It also, for example, there's another implementation of collaborative editing based on YJS, which is a CRDT system, which works completely different than operational transform, but serves the same purpose and can also be used as an implementation for this kind of thing, because it's not wired into the core. That's all I had to say. I'm pretty quick, it seems, but that means more time for questions. This here is the project's website, and the other one is if you want to see more of the stuff I write and build. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Can you make a comparison to how other editors do that sort of concept, having different modules that can access the state? Is that a very unique model that you have here, or is it now
I think in editor space it might be quite unique. I'm not actually that aware of what, for example, Code is doing at the moment, but I know it doesn't look anything like that, because they have very much designed their system from a monolith and then kind of made it reusable after the fact. It's also definitely very different from what, for example, Emacs does, which is mutable everything, and we have a shared space of variables where we're all kind of touching them, and then some interfaces are designed so that extensions can cooperate. Sometimes it goes catastrophically bad. I think this is definitely a space where a lot of the existing tools aren't that great yet, and I'm hoping to move the state of the art forward with it. Anything else?
How did you first come up with this architecture? Did you naturally arrive there? Did you take inspiration from like existing projects, or did you struggle a lot, experiment with things, and eventually ended up like this?
Took a lot of inspiration from Redux and Elm for sure. And a lot of this was prototyped in ProjMirror, which is another project that I'm working on, doing rich text kind of editor component. That was kind of the first iteration. I'm not super happy with it, and then I tried to do it right, the second iteration on this project.
You want another question?
A lot of problems that you've described, some like problems that are being solved by databases as well, and I wonder if you consider using a database as a sort of a baking store for the state.
Yeah, that's definitely true. There is a lot of overlap with what databases do. The thing about most database setups is that they throw away the old state as you update the state, which is something I didn't want here. Though you can, of course, there are all, but yeah, this is a library that's trying to keep its weight within reason. So there's also definitely a concern of doing the simplest thing that can work so that we don't build megabytes of code that people have to download, because in JavaScript, every client has to actually download it.
On the way, I have another question.
Yes.
Your transactions, are they categorized by type or by subject? Well, one time
no, they're just generic bags of effects, and there is one tag that you can add called user event, where you want to say, is this something typical that the user does, and then there's a little hierarchy of typing, deleting, selecting, typing with subtype, composing, typing with or deleting with subtype, deleting the selection. So that, for example, if you're implementing auto-completion and you want to update, like start completion when the user types, but not when they paste, so you don't just need to see the document change, but you want to see some user intent. So there is one tag that is used for stuff like that.
I came on this question when you were talking about the undo history, and then you said that the extension listens to everything that changes the document, and that could be a category. Or if another transaction is implemented in the system, might need to add that to the...
But everything that changes the document is just every transaction that has a document changing effect, so that kind of falls out naturally. It's just...
So you can identify those transactions.
Yeah.
So one quick question about the origins of this architecture. Does it come from the idea of having an extensible editor with many extensions changing the state, or was it with collaborative editing in mind?
No, it mostly comes from the requirements of having lots of extensions and having them rely like the I recently rewrote this whole system a few years ago. It was on version 5, which is very much jQuery era event system driven architecture. And some things, like for example, the thing where this was the worst was a merge view, where you have two editors side by side showing a different version of the document and displaying the changes. just keeping like the logic showing those changes in sync as those editors were being acted on was a royal headache in this event-driven architecture, because there would be so many things that could happen that would all need to be accounted for. And yeah, that kind of thing drove kind of this, we want a single point where things happen and not multiple points, so that it's much easier to do this kind of ambitious extension, which really needs to stay 100% in sync with what is happening.
Another one? So it
cool.
seems like the changes are not backwards compatible.
Yeah. No, this is...
So you have to update, and the third-party extensions have to be updated as well.
Yes.
Is that hard, in your experience?
Yeah, it's given a bunch of... Like, it's not something where you have to upgrade. A lot of people are still using the old library, but it's definitely... it's some effort to upgrade, but the people tend to be happy for the same reasons that... this was started in that their system becomes less dodgy.
So you have the support.
Yes.
Excellent. Great. Thank you very much.